Just a week in the life of a senator and a governor in Missouri, 2017.
On Monday, I was a Missouri elected official who betrayed the public's trust, and on Thursday, we were running buddies together. So that's just the weird web that politics play sometimes.
We'll get the whole story from Senator Denny Hoskins this week on Statehouse Blend, Missouri. From KCUR 89.3, this is Statehouse Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll talk with Denny Hoskins in a moment, but first, Governor Eric Greitens signed his top legislative priority into law this week, just a month into the session, and it was big. So big, he signed it three times.
For too long in the state of Missouri, for too long, people bowed down to intimidation. They bowed down to powerful union bosses who acted to protect their own interests instead of protecting the interests of Missouri workers.
That's Greitens at the Springfield signing ceremony for the Right to Work law, which opponents say will actually weaken unions, hurt pay, and make workplaces less safe. Next up on the Republican leadership's agenda, paycheck protection, which would require that workers opt into rather than out of union dues. Democrats have another name for it. They call it paycheck deception, including legislators like Mark Ellerbrocht of Liberty.
If you hold the belief that government should be limited in its role, why would we be introducing legislation that allows government to interfere in how private individuals pay their private dues to private organizations?
Nevertheless, it passed the House 95 to 60, and now it moves on to the Senate. The new head of Missouri's Department of Corrections, which has been plagued by allegations of harassment and retaliation, made her first appearance before a House committee, promising zero tolerance for any funny business going forward.
I am about putting people who can help change the culture of the environment in the positions of management and authority, because that is the only way we're going to be successful.
Ann Preseith, the new head of Corrections Department. And as we've talked about before here on Statehouse Blend, the Senate this week continued its totally bipartisan wrangling over the chamber's own procedures and rules. This week, an 18-15 vote went against efforts to give the Republican Senate President Pro Tem more ability to control the order of business. Half of those votes were from Republicans, including Denny Hoskins. And joining us this week in the KCUR production studio is Senator Denny Hoskins, a Republican from Warrensburg. Hi, Denny.
Hi.
Nice to have you back.
Yes, great to be here again.
And also joining us from KCUR's newsroom is Ellie Moxley. She covers education issues in Missouri. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Brian.
Good to have you back, too.
Thank you.
So is it wrong to say, Senator Hoskins, that you've been in the middle of a couple of intra-Republican conflagrations the last couple of weeks?
Yes, I definitely have been in the middle of a couple things, and it has nothing to do with our Republican leadership. I think President Pro Tem Ron Richard and Majority Floor Leader Mike Kehoe do an excellent job of guiding us, and the Senate is very different than the House. And they always say in the Senate, you know, we have 34 state senators, and you are the king or queen of your own island, which is we have a very decentralized leadership style in the Senate versus the House that has a very centralized leadership style.
And, of course, you've made the move from leadership in the House over to the Senate. So I want to talk about one of those conflagrations that happened.
Yes.
As you probably are not surprised that I'm asking about
yes.
this. The debate over the pay raise bill
yes.
Last week, there was, just to review for folks, there's a bipartisan commission that recommends pay raises for elected officials each year.
Yes.
I think it's based on cost of living and that sort of thing. The commission raises take effect unless the General Assembly passes a law to reject the raises.
Correct.
And that's become a ritual, right? Every
yes.
year the commission recommends a raise, the General Assembly rejects it. Except this time some of you in the Senate didn't want to reject it. Well, why not?
Yes. You know what I've always said, and I did most certainly did not go into politics to become rich, and our salary as a state representative or state senator is $36,000 a year. By comparison, the Missouri state governor makes around $133,000 a year. But at some point, and I've been out on the recruiting trail trying to recruit good candidates to run for state senate and state representative. And most of the time, you know, many people are like, yes, that's great. Oh, yes, I've always wanted to get into politics. And you say, oh, perfect. You know, we'd love to have you sign up. You can file and you make $36,000. And then the next question is, you mean, you get paid $36,000? Yes, that's what we make as a state representative or state senator. our elected officials have received one pay increase in the past 16 years and no pay increases in the past 10 years. And I voted against every pay raise, or voted against the salary commission's recommendation every time over the past 8 years since I've been in there. So at some point, you have to give a pay raise in order to attract high quality candidates, or else you end up with retirees and individually wealthy. And I've seen that in several other states. Nothing wrong with retirees or people that are individually wealthy, but I think we need to try and have a good cross section. And in fact, talking with Governor Greitens and about that pay raise, I told him that I would donate my pay raise. It would net about $500 more a year. I would donate that to his charity, The Mission Continues.
So let's talk about this conversation with Governor Greitens, because the governor was openly unhappy with the fact that the Senate was considering passing the pay raise, allowing the pay raise to happen.
Right.
He came over to the chamber. He was outside in the President Pro Tem's office.
Yes.
And called individual senators in, including you.
Right.
How would you characterize that conversation?
But that conversation was very tense. Governor Greitens had met with State Senator Paul Wieland before myself, and then I got asked. I said, "Hey, Governor Greitens is in President Pro Tem Ron Richards' office. He'd like to meet with you." So I went in there, and the governor said, "What's going on? What are you doing?" And I explained those same facts that I talked about earlier. That at some point you have to give a pay raise, and that in order to attract, high quality candidates. And I told him that I would donate my pay raise to his charity. The governor, in case you didn't know, he's a Navy SEAL.
And I've heard this.
Yes. And he has his own leadership and management style. And I think probably what he's used to is very top down, being an officer in the Navy. I commend him for his service, but very, "Hey, I give you the order and then you go do it. You go execute it." Well, we have three branches of government: the executive branch, legislative branch, and judicial branch. And so I don't think that the governor was expecting that I would debate or argue with them about this particular issue. And then he's used to just people doing what he tells them to do. And there's some political threats made as far as going to the media if this race passed and things like that. And so it was very tense through the whole time, but I mean that's part of it. It's not all niceties, for lack of a better word, in politics. And I told the governor, "Hey, we're going to disagree on some things, but that's okay. And this is one thing that we are going to disagree on." So I just dug my heels in.
And you voted no. You and Senator Wieland were the only two to vote no.
Yes.
And the next day, Governor Greitens wrote on Facebook, "Two senators voted for this pay increase. Senators Paul Wieland and Denny Hoskins betrayed the people they are supposed to serve last night by voting to raise their own pay."
Yes.
I know one of your responses to that. You responded on Twitter. You said, "Today I am praying for Eric Greitens." What was your prayer?
It had been on my mind quite a bit. And so when I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I did say a prayer for Governor Greitens. I know that he is a political outsider, and that's one of the reasons that the majority of Missourians elected him. They wanted a political outsider in that. But, he has to not only manage the state, but he had to come out with a budget with $572 million in cuts. And so I said a prayer for Governor Greitens, just saying, "Hey, please help him do the best that he can. And I know he's got a lot of things on his mind and a big state to run, and I want him to be successful. And so please help do anything that you can in order to make that happen."
Senator Hoskins, it's my understanding you've since had another conversation with the governor. He actually asked you to go jogging with him?
Yes, yes.
First of all, I mean,
he was a Navy SEAL.
Right. I have heard he's a Navy SEAL. And I'd like to note that this interview is not being conducted while jogging. So, how did that go? What was kind of the tone of that conversation?
The tone of that was on Wednesday, and we met and kind of aired some of our grievances. And I said, "Hey, I would much rather sit down and talk through things." I said, when we had a disagreement, intense conversation on Monday. I didn't go tweet about it. I didn't put any Facebook post about it. I didn't go out on the Senate floor and talk about it. You know, it was just sometimes things get heated and tense. And you know, when we're meeting and discussing different issues. So on Wednesday, he said, "Well, hey, what are you doing tomorrow morning? You want to go for a run?" And I, you know, any time that you get asked by the governor to go for a run or work out, I said, "Sure, I'd love to." And then that evening, I had to go buy some running clothes because I didn't have any in Jefferson City. But Thursday, we went for a run early in the morning. It was dark outside, 27 degrees and very cold. So we had about 20 minutes out. And he said, "Well, I think we'll run for about 25 minutes. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, "Oh, good. I wonder which one of these SUVs is going to pick us up then." And then he said, "And then on the way back, we're going to do some sprint interval training." And so we ran 25 minutes out straight. And then on the way back, we did some sprint interval training. And he would pick a spot about 100, 150 yards away. And we'd run 90% to there and then walk for a little bit. But he was running 90%, and I was running 120%, and I couldn't keep up with him. He's in very good shape.
Were you talking while you ran?
Yes. We had good conversations about higher education, about University of Central Missouri in my district. We had conversations about his family and my family, and had a good conversation. So, like I say, you know, on Monday I was a Missouri elected official who betrayed the public's trust, and on Thursday we were running buddies together. So that's just the weird web that politics play sometimes.
Well, there are in fact a lot of other things going on in Jefferson City and various pieces of legislation, but let me go to Ellie Moxley and see what's on her mind.
You know, you brought up you know, your home district and the fact that, you know, higher ed spending is something that was cut in Governor Greitens's budget. Can you just tell me a little bit more about kind of what you're thinking in terms of what that's going to mean for your district and as well as kind of what it means for the state to not be able to invest in higher ed?
You know, Governor Greitens, you know, again, the budget's a marathon, not a sprint. So the governor has given his recommendations where to make up that $572 million. And part of that, I believe 90-some million came from higher ed. I mean, will it kill the University of Central Missouri? No. Or will it kill the University of Missouri, Kansas City? No. But, I mean, we're all just going to have to tighten our belts and you know, unfortunately, that could be some tough decisions for UMKC or University of Central Missouri or the other parts of the MU system and our regional universities. I know you know, I've talked to President Chuck Ambrose from University of Central Missouri, and we've kind of gone through some things. He was glad that it wasn't the cut wasn't as bad as what he thought it might be, but still, I think that, you know, I know in higher education they're taking a look at all programs and all majors amongst all the universities to make sure that we're getting the best bang for a buck. And if you only have a couple of graduates in a particular program, is the cost, is it really being effective and efficient with our taxpayer dollars to continue that that major and that program? Or could we combine some of those together? So it's not an easy process. It's not a fun process. And, you know, but that's one of the reasons that people elected me to be in Jefferson City. They didn't elect me to up there to make all the easy decisions. They elected me to make the right decisions. And as a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, I look forward to doing that.
How much, in your view, of the governor's proposed budget is going to see the light of day once it gets through the General Assembly? Obviously, it's a starting place, but,
right.
But how much do you think that's a legitimate starting place that you all will give a lot of deference to?
You know, we will take into consideration the governor's recommendations, and just like I took in consideration Governor Nixon's recommendations, but, you know, we have Governor Greitens' recommendations, then we have the department's recommendations as well, but the department recommendations were made last September or October when Governor Nixon was still in control and he had his department heads, you know, making these requests. So I think It's really hard to say that this is Governor Nixon's budget recommendations. I mean, that they are, but being elected beginning of November and having to go through those thousands upon thousands of line items, and he still doesn't have all of his picks made for some of the different agency heads. So I think next year we will really see, you know, his priorities come through.
But what about your priorities? I mean, do you think the legislative leaders are on the same page in terms of priorities, cutting higher ed, cutting agriculture, cutting social services?
You know, with my eight counties, that was the one thing that I pointed out in Appropriations Committee. We had this big, long summary of all these highlights that we were doing, but the agriculture in Missouri is an $88 billion industry, and there was no highlights listed in the summary for agriculture. And then having the University of Central Missouri in my district, cutting higher education was a concern. Cutting transportation for K-12 was a concern because many of my school districts are very rural, and you know, it may be 25 miles one way in order to get bus a kid to their school. So some of those are very concerning to me. Where we we have to have a balanced budget. We can't print money or borrow money like the federal government does. So I'm hopeful as we go through this budget process, we will take a look at some of those recommendations the governor has done and maybe be able to find some savings some other places so we can put some more money back into the agricultural budget, higher ed, transportation for K-12. In fact, I've come out doing some research on a bill to help raise some revenue, actually have a positive revenue effect, about $122 million. So,
well, let's hear it. How are you going to raise revenue in a state where there's constitutional provisions that make it very difficult sometimes to raise taxes?
Yes. Well, the idea that has been brought to my attention and that we're working on, one of them is video gaming. And so whether you've been in a restaurant, bar, fraternal organization, truck stop, these video games, whether it's video poker or slot machine, are currently illegal. However, if you've been out and about anywhere in your life, you've probably seen at least one in some back corner that wasn't supposed to be there, but was there. So what my proposal would be is let's go ahead and bring these online. Let's go ahead and make them legal. And there's some that would argue that the Missouri State Lottery could do that already. But this just would clarify that, and we would put licenses on the restaurant or organization building that had those in there. There'd be a license fee for each actually game system, be a license for the operator. Those annual license fees would generate around $4.5 million per year, which would go to the Veterans Capital Improvement Trust Fund for our veterans homes and cemeteries, and then this would generate, according to the study, around $122 million that would go to the state and our local municipalities, about probably $22 million to the local municipalities, so around $100 million going to higher education to help out with that.
Is that gambling?
Yes. I believe. I mean, it is gambling, and currently it's illegal under state statute. So we would basically take those games that are already out there, that are in the back corner, that or in the basements, that that people aren't supposed to be playing, but they're playing, and bring them to the light of day. It's some of the provisions in this would they'd have to be in the line of sight of a worker, and you have to be 21 or older to play. $500 would be the most that you could win out of these. It would be a penny, nickel, dime, quarter, dollar a game. Would these replace our casinos? Oh, most certainly not. I think it'd be a much different demographic from somebody that might be at a truck stop or bar, restaurant, or organization building that had one of these versus someone going to the casinos and wanting to play the slot machines with a much higher limits and play those board games. But I mean, I guess the fact is that it's currently going on. It's just not legal the way that it's currently going on. So,
all right, one revenue proposal for Missouri is to increase gambling in the state.
Yes, well, basically take the illegal gambling that's going on now and bring it to the light of day and have those licenses. So we're always looking for, you know, different ways that we might be able to raise revenue for revenue shortfalls, and that's just one idea.
Obviously, finding new revenue is a good idea. In terms of what else can be cut, I know that we've come off a period where I feel like the state's been tightening its belt for many years now, and in a lot of ways has already made significant cuts. Is there anywhere else that you're seeing and that, you know, Senate Republicans are seriously looking at that aren't in Governor Greitens's proposed budget?
You know, we just started the committee hearings last week, and so we heard Office of Administration came in and presented their budget. We went line by line for several hours going through that. You know, so I think that there may be some other things that as they come to light and as we go through all the other different agencies, I mean, we'll probably spend, I don't know, 150 hours in Senate Appropriations Committee listening to the budget and going through those line by line. I know Governor Greitens has talked about reining in some of our tax credit programs, and most certainly I'm interested in looking at that. And I believe in our Senate Appropriations Committee, we took a look at historic tax credits and putting a cap of, I believe, $80 million on that, where the cap had been $140 million per year. So I think, you know, some of these other things, and we're still kind of really early in the appropriations process, so hopefully some other things will come to light as time goes by.
We talked about right to work passing. Next up on the labor-related agenda is paycheck protection.
Yes.
Passed the House this week. It's on its way over to the Senate. Is that a bill you support, Senator?
That is a bill that I do support. I voted for that bill in the past in my time in the House, and will continue to support that in the Senate, too.
Couldn't get past Governor Nixon's veto pen in the past. Looks like it probably would be signed by Governor Greitens. Democrats say, though, that there's that it's unfair, that it's just designed to undermine unions, that it's going to weaken them even further, which Right to Work already will do. Are you concerned about the impact of these bills, these laws, on organized labor?
You know, I think unions, you know, for the most part, you know, try and do a good job for their members. Have I got some concerns about the way unions are handled? Yes. You know, we talked about Right to Work. With Right to Work passing, Missouri's the 28th state. But my question has always been, too, okay, what happens when the 50th state becomes Right to Work? What advantage do we have over any other state if all states were Right to Work? And what can we do to make sure that companies want to come to Missouri? We had a joint committee, our Economic Development Committee meeting with the House and the Senate this past week, and we invited a site selector to come in. And what a site selector is, it's a company that, you know, they look for particular sites for manufacturing or companies to come in. And so, you know, if Ford or Chevy or Budweiser or Microsoft or Google or whoever said, hey, we're thinking about moving our headquarters, or we've got this idea and it's going to create 1,000 jobs and we're not for sure where we'd like to have that facility. Many times that company hires a site selector company, and the company would give the site selector company anywhere, you know, maybe from 50 to 500 points and say, hey, this is what we're looking at. And some of it is, you know, how well-trained and skilled labor workforce there is, the tax environment, the education system, climate could be one. And the company usually gives that company is looking to expand or grow would give that site selector company some of the must-haves. Well, on this site selector company said that one of the must-haves on 60% of the clients that they received is Right to Work. So automatically, when we were not a Right to Work state, six of out of every 10 companies that were looking to expand would not look at Missouri because Missouri is not a right-to-work state. Now, would they look at Kansas? Yes, they'd look at Kansas because Kansas is a right-to-work state, but we couldn't check that box. My hope is that those will be able to look, you know, we'll have 10 out of 10 companies look at being able to look at Missouri with the passage of right-to-work now.
Ellie, what else are you thinking about today?
As we're throwing around numbers, I mean, you say things, you'll talk about $80 million here, $122 million there. They seem like really big numbers for most of us that, you know, sit around and only have to manage our household budgets. Are there things that, having done this appropriations work, seen it, you know, from the other side of the table and setting out to do it again this year, what do you wish people understood maybe better about the budget process?
The budget process, we have about your taxpayer dollars, and I don't say it's the government money, it's the people's money. Missouri has a budget around $27 billion. And you can really divide that into thirds. A third is from the federal government, coming back of your taxpayer dollars, you send into Washington, D.C., and then they send it back to the states. A third is just fees and other things. And then the last third is general revenue. And general revenue, so it's around, you know, $9 billion in general revenue. But when you look at that, and then you have to divide that up into Medicaid, higher education, elementary and secondary education, and all the different pieces of the pie that go into that, there's really there's not a lot of discretion where we can, if we have to make cuts, where those cuts can come from. And many times too, you think, okay, well, we're going to tighten our belt. We're going to cut $100,000 out of general revenue for this particular program. And then you find out there was a 10-to-1 match from the federal government. And so you think you're only cutting $100,000, but actually you're cutting, you know, $1 million or $1.1 million because of the federal match. So it's a, like I said before, I think the biggest thing would be is, you know, the governor's issued his recommendations. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Most certainly, listeners out there, if you're passionate about a particular funding, where your taxpayer dollars should go, contact your state representative and state senator. I mean, we do listen, and I know I try and meet with as many constituents as possible and listen to where they think that we should put that money.
You heard it here first. He wants you to call his office.
Yes.
With your feedback. One last area I want to make sure we cover is another bill that's probably on its way over to the Senate, and that's the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program.
Yes.
The House has passed it again, mm-hmm. As it has in the past. There's one of your colleagues, of course, in the Senate, Senator Rob Schaff of St. Joseph, who has pretty much single-handedly kept this bill from passing the last couple of sessions.
Yes.
He's even offered a different version of his own this year. Where do you stand on prescription drug monitoring, and what do you think its prospects are this time around?
Well, I think probably this year the prospects are good. I voted against that bill in the past. I've had some concerns about creating another database that has, you know, I had a shoulder injury about a month ago and was on hydrocodone. So, you know, with this bill, I would be on some database that said, hey, Denny Hoskins is on hydrocodone. And I really don't think
But 49 other states have a database like that.
Right. And I agree with that. What I've said is those people that have abused the system, those people that have been convicted of crimes related to prescription drugs and abusing those prescription drugs, put them on a database, or someone that is trying to kick the habit. And then this past Thursday, I also met with the interim director, I believe it's for Department of Health and Social Services, and a new gentleman from, I believe, the state of North Carolina. We had a chance to visit a little bit. And I don't know the specific proposals and look forward to finding out more information, but based on some conversations that I've had with some of the governor's staff and others, it sounds like in many of the states that the PDMP, the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, is not working. But this new interim director, I guess, has some other ideas about ways to curb opioid abuse. And I want to find out what those are before, you know, PDMP comes on effect. But, you know, we talk about all these databases. We got database for concealed carry permit holders. We've got, you know, your e-file and your tax return. So there's a database at Department of Revenue. We talked about Real ID, and you know, Real ID would be another database. And then we talk about PDMP. If you're, you know, get hurt and start taking hydrocodone or oxycodone or any of those, to be in another database. So I just have some privacy and security concerns to make sure that there's not, you know, we hear about these identity thefts and hackers and things like that. The less information that can be on any database, I think the better, and that's in the best public's interest.
You brought up Real ID. I know Yes. That's something that we've heard a lot of conversations with as it pertains to, you know, air travel. Do you see a fix coming this session?
I certainly hope so. You know, I have Whiteman Air Force Base in my district, and right now a Missouri driver's license, you can't get on Whiteman Air Force Base. And I know Senator Sylvie has brought up a proposal, and I have a bill filed as well. It would basically just give people a choice. So when you went in and renewed your driver's license, they would say, do you want a real ID compliant driver's license, which means you could use that to get on military base and use that for travel, or do you want a just regular driver's license, and that will work to drive around the state, but you won't be able to travel by air starting in January 2018 with that. So I'm hopeful that we can pass something like that. I know some of my colleagues are saying, well, let's see what the new Trump administration does, and maybe they'll take away some of those requirements. I don't want to count on that or bet on that, because we're in session till May, and I certainly don't want to come back in a special session later on this fall to work on just Real ID if the federal government doesn't make any changes. I know some of my colleagues, Senator Krause, has some concerns, you know, at a Lee Summit and about Real ID, but I've just said that, you know, my bill basically, it requires the minimum amount of information to be kept in that database. And you know, you have some people that will say, well, why don't you just get a passport card? Well, because they're concerned about the database. And I say, well, so what you're saying is you don't want a Real ID database here in the state of Missouri, but you're telling people to go get a passport card, so it'll be all their information will be on a federal database somewhere. Right. And I thought that's what we're trying to prevent.
So, will you support the bill that Kevin Corlew has sponsored in the House that appears headed to passage there?
Yes, yes. In fact, I borrowed my language from Representative Corlew, so mm-hmm. The language is, I believe, almost identical. And I hope that Representative Corlew's bill gets out of the House or Senator Sylvie's gets out of the Senate, and we're able to make sure that Missourians can travel on planes starting in January 2018.
Very good. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. I want to thank KCUR's Ellie Moxley for being here. Thanks, Ellie.
Thanks, Brian.
And Senator Denny Hoskins, a Republican from Warrensburg. Always good to have you here.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
I want to make one announcement. Last week on the podcast, we said that Governor Greitens hadn't held any press conferences other than a couple where he only took questions on a specific subject, like the winter storm. Press Secretary Parker Brydens pointed out to us that when Greitens announced his budget at a school in Nixa, Missouri, he did in fact take questions from the reporters who made the journey there for that. We regret that error. State House Blend Missouri is produced by Matt Hodapp. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've already done that and you like what you hear, please post a review. You can also find us on the NPR One app now. Just search for us in Explore and tap Follow. If you use Twitter, that's a great way to keep up on the show and the news from Jeff City. I'm at PTS Brian. You can also follow the host of State House Blend Kansas, my friend Sam Zeff. He's at Sam Zeff. And we try to use the hashtag StateHouseBlend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date. That's at 11 a.m. on KCUR 89.3. And if you have any other thoughts, write to me at brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll see you next time.